Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News. Today is the 18th day of the planetary dog moon of manifestation, Kali, second chakra, red cosmic Skywalker day. The affirmation is, I endure in order to explore, transcending wakefulness. I seal the output of space with the cosmic tone of presence. I am guided by the power of navigation. It's also Gregorian calendar, Wednesday, April 21st, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing usually every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Today is a little different to help my guest out with her schedule, her busy schedule. My lead-in music is the first cut, Icos, short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry, off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you would like to chat while we are on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Margaret McGee. She's an author, poet, labyrinth presenter, and builder who led a team at her church, St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Port Townsend, Washington, in the installation of their courtyard medieval Chartres-style labyrinth. Thank you, Margaret, for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be with you, Christiana.
And how's the weather up there? Same as here, drizzling?
Well, it's not actually drizzling right now. It is overcast, but it's not a bad day given what time of year it is.
Yeah, we do get that constantly here on the Pacific West Coast. The kind of, but it's beautiful. We have all the lilacs are out, and I'm just made a scotch broom. It's so much earlier than I'm used to back on from the east.
Our native rhododendron are just starting to come out, and that's early here too. So the pink blossoms are breaking open. This is actually. I wish it were a little bit warmer, but it's still my favorite time of year because it is so beautiful. Everything comes into bloom just in the next few weeks.
Yeah, me too. So let's get right into it here. When you wrote me, you said that you are an author, books on the spiritual path, and a maker and lover of labyrinths for many years. You said the labyrinth in your backyard is built directly over your septic tank, which seems to me, and this is, I quote you, which seems to me like a great metaphor for the experience of walking a labyrinth. What we might see as waste material is being processed into rich compost just beneath the surface. That is such a poet who would think up that. And I thought that was great. And so I was just wondering, when people come to your house and find out where the labyrinth is sited and walk the labyrinth, what are their reactions?
Well, people are very strongly drawn to it. As soon as they see it, it's often a surprise for them because our home is situated in a woods a little ways off the lane that we live in, and the labyrinth is not visible from the road or from the approach to the house. So when I take people around the house, or sometimes they don't see it until they're actually in our house and they glimpse it through a window, they're just immediately drawn to it, especially children. It just looks like a playground to them, and they pour out there and make up games immediately running up and down through the paths. The labyrinth is visible from our guest room window, and I think that just creates a peaceful, restful atmosphere for people who come and stay with us. A couple months ago, a friend of mine who had never walked a labyrinth before came on a visit. And as everyone, she saw it and was curious about it. And so I took her out there and explained about the single path in and out. And we walked it together. I walked ahead and she followed me. And we just walked it in silence, came to the center, spent a few moments there, and then walked out. And after we came out, she just looked at me, and her face was glowing. She said, "That was wonderful. That was amazing." She said she had been having a problem with a coworker in her job, and standing in the center, it was as though she suddenly saw a way to open up in that relationship, to be more forthcoming herself. And it made her feel that new possibilities had opened up. It was as though a door had opened for her in this problem relationship. And of course, I was just like, wow, that's great. I was thrilled to introduce her to the labyrinth and to have her have that experience on her first walk.
No, you know, we know people, those of us who've walked it and used labyrinths for years and years, we have gazillion stories like that, but it yeah. always is so impactful when you hear it again, and it's the first time somebody walks, the first or second time, and they have these kinds of experience, and then you know, that this really is possible, that this labyrinth energy and the grid, it works, it really works.
Yes, that's right.
Well, we wanted to talk about the team aspect of the labyrinth building process
yes.
in a church setting, which you're very involved in. So let's start with some background first. Tell us a bit about your church and how the idea for a labyrinth on the grounds came up.
Well, St. Paul's in Port Townsend is a historic church. It's one of the oldest Episcopal parishes in Washington State, and the building is a historic building. It was built in 1865, it seems to me I've heard that it's the oldest Episcopal church building in Washington State that's been in continuous use as a church. It's a beautiful little building, and what happened was that the parish, we also had an old parish hall, but it no longer served the needs of the community, and it couldn't really be refurbished to serve the needs of the community. So we sold that building, actually, and it was moved about a block away, and we built a new parish hall. And that created kind of new spaces between the buildings. So there was much talk about what to do with those new spaces, and some people wanted to put a labyrinth in the space between the new parish hall and the church. Our rector at the time, whose name was Gail Helgeson, favored the project, and, you know, people have to talk about these things for a while, especially when it's an organization doing it. It doesn't work very well, I don't think, to just impose something like this on an organization. So anyway, she arranged for a local woman who does labyrinth workshops to come to St. Paul's and do a workshop that drew the labyrinth on the ground in the space just in white flour, in wheat flour. So it was a very temporary one, but it enabled people to see it. That was back in the spring of 2003. And I took part in that workshop and just found it, once it was there, it really makes a difference to be able to see it in place. Once it was there, then I could picture it and as a courtyard, I could see how the space could work as a courtyard. So then I agreed to form and lead the kind of core group that would carry the project forward. That group was formed in the summer of 2003 with the purpose to write a proposal to, you know, figure out what we were going to do and write a detailed proposal for the parish's vestry or board, because they'd have to approve the project. So that's how it got started.
So you, the way you educated your staff and the members of your church was through this workshop mm-hmm. that you had with this woman. And
well,
she
that was kind of the start of it, but actually we needed the parish. There was a good deal of confusion, you know, about the nature of the labyrinth. So once people saw it there, that helped. But what we had done in the workshop was, like I say, it was a very temporary thing. It was just done in white flour, the first heavy rain, and it was gone. People saw it. It was there long enough for people to see it. But people had seen labyrinths, you know, made out of rocks, so that the rocks on either side of the path would define the path, or hedges, or mounds, or something like that. And the space where it was an important, it was a place where people passed from one building to the other. So, in other words, there was some concern of, well, you're going to take this space that is an entryway for us from one place to another. And we had to explain. I wrote articles for the church newsletter to say, no, we're not going to, you know, you've seen them made out of rocks. We aren't going to do that. The proposal was a flat, even surface made out of pavers, with the labyrinth, you know, embedded in the design of the pavers. So we had to do a number of things to educate people. I wrote these articles. We hosted an evening forum discussion and invited a labyrinth author, Melissa Gale West. She wrote the book, Exploring the Labyrinth, A Guide for Healing and Spiritual Growth. And then we also invited Joanna Reinstra, who was the woman who helped us make the one in flower. And then it was an evening forum. They spoke. They took questions. Melissa had copies of her book. So it was over a period of time to just help people picture it, because it was a new, some people in the parish were very familiar with labyrinths, others not at all. And we needed to, you know, help people know what we were talking about.
Did you have issues with belief systems? You know, since it's a religious setting, even though it's Episcopal mm-hmm. Church, and of course, but there are some, you know, people who, you know, don't have issues with it. Did you have to then also address that in terms of how or why it would be in a religious setting, or why it would be?
Well, we were proposing to use the Chartres design, and so we could talk about how that design was developed in the medieval church, and symbolism, Christian symbolism that's just embedded right in the design. That design has a cross pattern, and the center is in a rosette shape, which is symbolically related to both Christ and Mary. So we could talk about the history of this design in terms of its symbolism in the church. And yeah, that helped. That was actually very interesting to people. You know, it's kind of a combination of analytical, mathematical stuff and very creative aesthetic stuff. And I mean, that's right down the Episcopalians' line. They they love the combination of the aesthetic and the mind
analytical.
And beauty.
Yeah,
yeah, they love that stuff. So, yeah, but we did.
So
we had to educate people.
Yeah, and what can you just name some of the research materials and organizations that you access to enroll your congregation in this? I mean, libraries or online websites? What did you use to help you?
Well, boy, I'm trying to think now. As I say, we used Melissa's book, and we did research ourselves. We used Lauren Artress's book, Walking the Labyrinth, and we went around to labyrinths in our geographic area, and the team, you know, we went and we walked them and we talked to people who had built them and took photographs and brought things back to just to help people see what it was. I can't say I remember websites that we used.
Are you a certified labyrinth facilitator with Veritas?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Is anyone in your congregation?
No. No,
okay.
We just did. We used their material and we used the books, but we pretty much developed it on our own.
Because they have a forum that's very helpful for people who are trying to do this, because all of the facilitators who have done this all over the place and in many different settings and venues, you know, exchange information and exchange. So that's another thing to access if in fact anybody is interested. That's another. If they know
great.
People who are facilitators, they can easily access the Facilitator Digest, and there's a gobs and gobs of information on there. So, but tell us about now the process of creating the team. What did that entail?
Well, the core team was 10 people, and what we did once we decided to make this team is I sat down with our rector, and we exchanged names of people that we knew in the parish who had expressed an interest in taking part in this and developed a list. And I called people up, and some said yes, and some said, you know, some were not able to participate in it at that time. But we ended up with a core team of 10 people who then worked together to figure out what materials we were going to use, what process we were going to use, how much it was going to cost, stuff like that. Then we wrote the proposal, gave it to our vestry, and that was given out then to the whole parish for a month of commentary. And then the vestry voted to go ahead with it. And then, of course, we needed more people. And when we were ready to do the installation, we got volunteers from the parish and from the larger community of people who were interested in helping to build it. And it was largely a volunteer effort. We ended up with over 100 people who helped to build our labyrinth.
Well, that helps a lot. Wow.
Yes,
makes it go much faster.
It makes it go faster, and it also makes it a true community project. It isn't just a few labyrinth freaks who are doing everything. It's people who come together to create this new space.
Well, so but in terms of creating the team, did you have criteria that you used to decide who you wanted on your team in terms of what their backgrounds were, so that therefore they would be helpful in, I mean, in terms of the tasks that you had to assign to these team members?
Right. The core team who wrote the proposal, you know, the only real criteria was to want to do it and to care about it and be willing to do the research. When we got to the place of installation, we did find one person. We actually hired one person, a local landscape designer and builder, to help us because we were doing it all in Sunset pavers, and it was very important to prepare the site appropriately ahead of time to get the right drainage and angles and everything, and he was expert in this. His name was Aragorn Dean, and so we hired him for his technical expertise and skills, and he was with us during the week. Otherwise, we needed people who were able to haul pavers in wheelbarrows from our parking lot to the site. We needed people who were able to actually lay the pavers. So there's a certain amount of physical energy there. And then we needed people who would make lunch for the volunteers. So that was a whole other aspect of it. And we had one person who coordinated the lunches, and then we had another person. That was another skill that was needed, is the ability to coordinate volunteers with a team this size. So one person was coordinating the food, another person was coordinating the volunteers, scheduling them day by day so that we had people each day to do the physical labor. And then I was actually the sort of the site boss during the week, so that when things went wrong, they looked at me and said, "Now what?" I looked back at them and said, "Well, let's figure that out then."
And how did you, when you decided, so you as a group are making the decisions about what type of labyrinth to put down and what kind of materials to use and that
yes.
kind of thing?
Yes. During our planning phase, when we had that core team of 10 people, all of those people were involved in the decision, and we went through a period of time in which we were trying to figure out our materials. So I think we had three different people on the team bring in a proposal of materials. So they did some research. One team did, we could use these Sunset pavers, which is what we ended up doing. I proposed a different material, which I'm very glad we didn't do, because we ended up with something much better than what I had proposed, and there was a third proposal too. And then we brought stuff in, we tried stuff out so that people could see it, and then made all of the decisions together. I don't think we ever took a vote in the core group. I think we always ended up with a consensus. Now, once we got to installation, you know, and 100 volunteers, no. We just told them what to do, and they did it.
Yeah. So how did you come up with the funds to pay for the landscape, a professional guy to help do the initial groundwork,
mm-hmm.
and then for the materials?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a very serious issue. It's not a large parish. It's not a rich parish. We got a donation, a very generous and anonymous donation of $1,000. It's kind of a little starter. Then when the proposal went through the vestry, some people in the parish who supported the project immediately donated some funds. We did a book sale. You know, ask people to donate used books, and oh my Lord, they just came out of the woodwork. We completely filled our parish hall with books one weekend and earned a little over $1,000, I think, on a book sale. The parish has a memorial fund that people donate to in the name of various members of the parish when they pass away, and the vestry gave us a grant from the memorial fund, which I think is very appropriate for a project like this. And we got more donations until we had enough to do it.
I know in a lot of labyrinths, the one in the cathedral in D.C., the pavers or the tiles actually have people's names on it who donated.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do
mm-hmm.
anything like that? Or
we didn't, but what we did do, the center of our labyrinth is a mosaic that is made of beach stones collected from the beaches in around Port Townsend. Port Townsend is located on a little peninsula that sticks out into the Straits of Juan de Fuca, and so we have beaches on three sides, and they're very stony beaches. And an artist in the parish designed the rosette center to be a mosaic of different colored beach stones set in mortar. And we asked people in the parish and in the community to go on beach walks and pick up red and black and white stones. Those are colors that are quite common in the stones in this area, and bring them in and donate them. And put all the time we were planning, we had these bins on the porch of the parish hall steps, and the artist who was designing the center, she's in the choir. And every Sunday, she'd stand up in the choir at announcement time and say, you know, more red rocks. We need more red rocks, or more black rocks. And those bins filled up so that when the time came to make it, she had plenty of material. And I have to say, the center is beautiful. It's stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it was donated by all of the people in the parish and also even people outside of the parish who heard about the project. One man who had a hobby of polishing beach stones, you know, he had one of those tumblers at his home, donated quite a few polished stones for our center, and then there's also little mosaics at the turns that use these stones.
And what's the dimensions of the labyrinth?
It's 30 feet in diameter, which
uh-huh.
is small for that design of labyrinth, but it's big enough. That the paths are, it helps a lot that it is completely even and flat. So in other words, your feet don't always have to be inside the path.
Right. And wheelchairs, it's sort of wheelchair accessible. The wheelchairs can still wheel on it.
That was very important to us. It had to be wheelchair accessible. It had to be walker friendly. Mm-hmm. This is a courtyard, as I say. This is how people walk from church to mm-hmm. the parish hall. They walk right across the labyrinth, and so the space had to be accessible to everybody, and it is.
So how did you, during this team process and, you know, issues come up, I know I've been on lots of teams, how did you create camaraderie and resolve conflict? What were some of the things that you did to keep everybody going and on track and maintain a win-win situation? Because that's always what you're looking for, I think, and especially in this.
Yes, and it is a challenge, and it happened to be a kind of a special challenge for us because completely unrelated to the Labyrinth project, it happened that the parish went through a period of time of political conflict, internal conflict over other issues during the same time we were planning the Labyrinth. And there were people in that core group who were not on the same side of the other things. So So there was potential for, you know, sort of spillover conflict. I think, to me, one of the most important things that we did was the way we started every meeting. Some of the other members of the group and I sort of collected a series of short verses from the Bible that have to do with creation and have to do with the path. We have about, I guess, about 15 of them. And we would start every meeting by just reading these verses around the circle of the group. For example, the first one is from Psalm 74. And, of course, the Psalms are prayers, so this is addressed to God. And the verses that we used go like this. Yours is the day, yours also the night. You established the luminaries and the sun. You have fixed all the bounds of the earth. You made summer and winter. And then the next person in the circle would read the next verse, which would, again, have to do with either creation or the path. And I think that helped center us and helped, I mean, to me, one of the things that it means to be made in the image of God is that you have a spark of the creative spirit in you. So we were like joining with the Creator to make something beautiful, not only for ourselves, in part for ourselves, but also for the whole community. You're offering it to the community. And I think that reminder, time and time again, helped center us, helped us say the important thing we're doing here is this project, and helps keep all of the other stuff out of the room, which was very important.
You know, getting them out of their egos and into the bigger
right.
stream, the creator stream.
Right, exactly. And
yeah.
And then the other thing is we did, as I say, there were people in the group who, it was not a homogenous group, but we were all focused on this project. You know, sometimes in the very difficult period of times of the political problems in the parish, I actually focused my mind on whoever would use this labyrinth 100 years from now. And I said, I am making this for that person. And I actually pictured a couple meeting on it, falling in love, having a baby, and having their baby baptized on the labyrinth. And I just focused my mind on that couple 100 years away. And again, it just like you say, it takes you out of your ego, out of yourself, and says, this is a gift to something larger than myself.
Well, that's so important. That's such an important aspect and such an important thing for people who are starting projects like this to hear. We did the same thing in Vermont when we were doing the labyrinth there. It was a little different because of the Tibetan Buddhist and Cherokee tradition, but it still was that it was using ritual and prayer to take,
yeah.
to bring us, to make us a part of a whole, something bigger than ourselves.
Exactly.
I wanted to tell you, we've got two callers on the line here, so I want to get to them, and it's already 2:04. Just quickly, how long did the whole process take, and did your team do anything fun when you finished it?
Oh, well, it took us about 9 months to plan it, which is a very appropriate period of time for a creative project. Then it took us a week to install it, and that was a very heavy week. And when it was done, we walked it. We had a party, and we danced on it. And we had a beautiful outdoor service, complete with vestments flowing in the wind. Again, that's something that Episcopalians do very well. And we dedicated it. So all of that, I have memories of all of that, and it's so beautiful.
Do you have pictures on the, is there a church website?
There is a church website for St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Port Townsend, and the banner of the website shows our beautiful mosaic center of the courtyard.
Mm. And do you have a special labyrinth program at St. Paul's? Do you have a like a guild like they have at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral here in Portland? Do you have a guild up there or a special program that?
We don't have a guild. We have programs on the labyrinth. We've organized moonlight labyrinth walks and invited the community and had people come in, and we put candles all around, and people walk it in the moonlight with prayers beginning and ending it, and that has been very, very beautiful. And then children are, as I say, they're just drawn to it, and our Vacation Bible School uses it as part of their program every year, and the children just love it, and it's integrated into their program. And
well,
then we
sounds
have
great.
Visitors. Yeah, we have visitors. We have strangers walking it. It's not at all unusual for me to, you know, go there for a church meeting in the middle of the week, and someone's walking it that I've never seen before.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Do you have it on the town? Is there a Chamber of Commerce where you have it listed in the town so the public knows about it?
Well, I think it, I'm not sure what the parish does to, I mean, it's right out in the open. It's right, it's visible from the sidewalk. So I see. And it's in the
Everybody.
Middle of town, so people know.
Let me get these people on the air. I'm going to start. I'm going to do each one separately and ask them their names and then and bring them all both in here. So let's
okay. Thank you.
Hi, this is Labyrinth in the News. You're on the air. Who's this?
My name is Roberta.
Hi, Roberta. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Christiana?
Fine, thanks. I'm going to get. We have one more caller. I want to get them on too. Just hold on. Hi, this is, you're on Labyrinth in the News. You're on the air. Who's this?
David.
Hi, David. Welcome to Labyrinth in the News. We have another caller on, so there's four of us on. How wonderful. So can I ask now, David, and what's the other woman's name?
Roberta.
Roberta. So let's start with you, Roberta. Do you have a question or a thought or anything you would like to add to our discussion?
Well, I just wanted to thank Margaret. I've been listening, and this story has been quite inspiring to me, particularly in the aspect of a community that perhaps is at odds with one another, coming together and doing something physical that has somehow brought this sense of healing to the community. And I was wondering if Margaret could speak to the aspect of this being something of a pilgrimage, either as individuals or as a community doing this process, during this process.
Oh, wow. Yes, I think that's a great comparison. I've heard a pilgrimage described as an outer physical journey that is related to the inner spiritual journey or maybe an outer journey that sets an inner journey in motion, helps set us on a new path. And I think that's exactly what happened in the parish during the course of time of making this labyrinth. It's almost like we joined together to actually build a new path. Mm. And the labyrinth became a place that we could come together. But in doing it, you know, I think we become so disembodied. It's like our minds and our spirits are something separate from our bodies. And when you come together and build something physically, then that engages both the body and the spirit, which I think is exactly what pilgrimage is historically has done for spiritual seekers. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And David, do you have something you'd like to ask or contribute?
Well, it strikes me when I see occasionally labyrinths that aren't very complicated, or they don't look too complicated to build, just made out of stone, like laid on the ground. And I'm wondering if this is a kind of thing that a neighborhood, how would a group of people do it, or neighborhood or families or something, if you had a common place where you could put one of the simple kinds of rock labyrinths, how would that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we made the labyrinth at my house, my first thought about it, I wanted one very much, but I thought, before I knew how to do it, it was like, well, how can you do that? How can you get those paths all even and in that pattern? It just looked impossible to me. But like so many things like this, there's a trick to it. And once you know the trick, it's not all that hard to do. And what I basically say to someone is, I took a workshop from a local person who gave a workshop, but now there are all of these books that will tell you how to do it. And what you do, I won't be able to give all the steps, but you find the center, you figure out the diameter, how big you want it to be, and then divide that by however many paths there are going to be, so that then you know how wide your path is. You figure out where the entrance is, and then I'm not going to go into the details, but when you get a book or the instructions, you are making circles on the ground and then connecting the paths between them, and you can draw it in flour or sand and then place the rocks on top. When we did it, I had my two nephews out there. They were only like 8 and 10 years old, and they helped us make it. They drew it on the ground in sand and then raced around and placed rocks for us, and they had a wonderful time. It's definitely a community or a family project, and it's not as hard to do as it looks like it is when you see the results. But you would you can find a How to Build a Labyrinth book. There are an extraordinary number of them now.
And if you're up in Port Townsend and you have access to beaches, one of the best things to do to start out is, if you have internet access, you can go on labyrinthsociety.org. You can go on Robert Ferre's website, labyrinthenterprises.com, and they have step-by-step instructions on how to make different 7th Circuit and 11th Circuit labyrinths. And the best thing to do to start out is just go to the beach and use a stick and make them on the beach and try it and just keep making the design until you get the sense of what one step and then the next and the next and how things connect. And I did that for years. Every beach I went to, I would make a labyrinth with my foot sometimes if I couldn't find a stick. And that's a great way to just get in the habit of it and get used to making and connecting the lines and figuring
mm-hmm.
that out.
Mm-hmm. I've spent time just drawing them over and over again. And, by the time you draw it the 10th time, it's like you're starting to kind of grok what's going on underneath.
Yeah. Well, we're sort of out of time. We're right at the end, and I just wanted to thank everybody so much for coming on board today. And I am going to hang up our callers. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you have a great week and many happy labyrinth walking days.
You too.
And Margaret?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
It was lovely talking with you, Christiana. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So many blessings on your path. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me Monday, April 26th, when my guest will be Meryl Ann Butler, visionary artist and labyrinth designer. Join us as we discuss her labyrinth art and her path. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.